My name is Joe Vaughn, and the title of this session is Prisoners of Hope, Spiritual Conversion versus Change Through Psychotherapy. I wanted to lead off by reading last Sunday's first lesson from Zechariah, because it said something to me, at least from the point of view of how I looked at this talk, and some about some broader issues too. But let me read that for you, and then we'll have a short prayer, and then we'll begin. This is Zechariah 9, verses 9 through 12. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Lo, your king comes to you, triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on an ass, on a colt, the foal of an ass. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim, and the war horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall be peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you also, because of the blood of my covenant with you, I will set your captives free from the waterless pit. Return to your stronghold, O prisoners of hope. Today I declare that I will restore to you double. Lord, we're all prisoners of hope. Unlock the jails of our own making, the prisons of our hearts and minds. Fill us with the hope of a new awareness and a new life through your Son, Jesus Christ. For it is in his name we pray. Amen. I couldn't let go of that phrase, prisoners of hope, and I couldn't let go of the promise in that passage. For some time now, I've been interested in trying to understand how it is that people change. Part of that quest in understanding comes out of my background, obviously. I'm a clinical psychologist. I've been a psychologist for 15 years, working in a variety of different settings. For the past 7 years, I've been in private practice, working with people and individual and couples and sometimes family therapy. It fascinates me that some people change and some people do not. And I can say probably that in my 15 years, I'm still not sure why some people change and some people do not. I know that they do, though. More recently, in my own experience, I've been aware of a change in myself. And that has been a spiritual change. Approximately, I don't even know now, 4, 5, 6 years ago, I experienced a conversion experience, if you will, a change in my life through Jesus Christ. That seemed to me to be in many ways a very different kind of change than takes place in psychotherapy, and yet at the same time, I see many similarities between that change. Having done therapy and doing therapy now, as well as having been a client in therapy, as well as having had this spiritual awareness in my life, I feel like I've got a very close view of what those changes are like. I'm not so sure how objective it is. And I've never really given this talk before either, but I'm really anxious to do it. I'm interested in doing it because of my attempt to somehow try to put some of those things together. I have a kind of sketchy outline, if 3 pages is sketchy here, that I want to partially talk to you about, partially put on the board. I hope that I can get it up in the next 20 or 25 minutes, and then I really welcome your comments, your additions, your deletions, your experiences as they relate to the kinds of change we're talking about today. I really, quite frankly, I'm interested in understanding more about what it is that goes on in that kind of change process, and I know that you can help me with that. I hope that some of my awareness and understanding will help you with it too, and help you to see both sides, or at least these two major areas in which I think people change. I hope at the end of the time we'll come to some kind of understanding as to whether or not they really are the same, and as to whether or not they're mutually exclusive, as to whether or not there are problems in seeing it in that way. When I originally thought about giving this talk, I wanted to introduce it by going into some material about why in the world we're such a psychologically oriented society. Milton Gross has written a book called The Psychological Side. It's not a very flattering book in terms of what it says about being a psychological society and the kinds of people, psychologists, psychiatrists, who we have revered and now placed in guru status in our society. But I think it speaks to what is going on. I don't think we have the time, quite frankly, in this particular presentation to trace the roots of that and still get into the heart of what I think is my talk today, and that is this model, this comparison of psychotherapy and spiritual change. I'm going to try to bring out a few of those things, however, as we go along, talk to some of those issues as we go along. If we have time at the end, perhaps we can elucidate on that issue further as well. So what I want to do then today is point out some similarities. And let me get just a basic framework up here. We're talking about change. And we're talking about secular change, or psychotherapy in this instance, and for a moment we'll rule out what pastoral counseling would be, or counseling by psychotherapy by one's minister might be, just for the moment. And we're talking about sacred change. And by that I mean spiritual conversion. Now you're going to see right away that this model may be something you can relate to, but you can also see it's going to be my model in the sense that it's part of my experience. But I want to kind of go down the board here, if we can get it all on, and contrast secular change and sacred change, psychotherapy and spiritual change, compare and contrast them along some basic points. First of all, the first point is, and I think for either one of these changes to occur, and certainly for change in psychotherapy to occur, the first thing that has to happen here is some awareness that something isn't right. And that's usually through what we call a symptom. Something has to be going on in somebody's life that isn't particularly good, or that's unsettling, or that's difficult, be it an addiction of some kind, drinking too much, be it marital stress, be it depression, whatever you want to label here, some kind of symptom has to present itself. It's interesting to point out, however, that symptoms usually come much later than the illness itself, and we'll call it illness for the time being anyway. The symptom is usually a reflection of something that has been wrong for some time that we haven't been listening to. The symptom, in many ways, is a call to attention that something is going wrong in our life. I like to call this our unrightness. And you'll see why in a minute. This symptom, this awareness of our unrightness, if something's wrong in our world, if something's wrong in our life that's not working, I contrast that on this side with, in spiritual conversion, that's something that what has to happen first before we change, again, is we have to have an awareness, but at this point, I would say an awareness of sin and an awareness of our unrighteousness. Here again, it's my belief that just as in psychotherapy, and just as in our own lives, we tend to deny that we're experiencing problems, that we tend to put aside problems we're having, that we don't want to look at them, we don't want to see that there are problems in our life, we also tend to do that with sin. that we don't see ourselves in many instances as doing wrong or as being wrong for some time. Usually until that gets us into trouble in some way. Until that creates some kind of problem for us in our life. Somebody once asked me, and this was in our congregation when I was talking, I think, about my own experience in change here, and was talking a little bit about the trouble that I felt and experienced in my life at the time prior to that. Somebody asked me, why is it that everybody who talks about conversion or change in their spiritual awareness or coming to God first starts with problem? Why is it that you have to have a problem? Can't you ever have a conversion experience where you're just kind of feeling okay about yourself and then you come to know God in a new way or come to this spiritual change in some way? Well, I guess you can. But in a way, I think the problem becomes the problem, and the problems that build up are what bring us to a point where we have to do something in our life, where we have to face ourselves with what we're doing. We have to look at what's going wrong in our life. And sometimes we have to have some fairly serious kinds of problems before we're able to do that, before we're able to see that we really are missing the mark, that we really are not going in the right direction in our life. Okay, so that we talk about the fact that that in both of these, there's an awareness that has to take place to begin with. For the change to occur, there has to be an awareness in both that something's wrong. From there, we go to what we're going to do about that. In psychotherapy, which is some people call it counseling, some people call it therapy, lots of different names, lots of different kinds of psychotherapy, but essentially, in every psychotherapy, we have to talk. We have to deal with and express and begin to get in touch with, if you will, what it is that's going on here. What it is that's in our awareness, what it is that's not in our awareness that has to come into awareness, what we call the unconscious. And we have to begin to do that in the process we call psychotherapy. I believe that in a parallel way, in spiritual change, that we have to confess. That we have to talk to ourselves or to another about what it is going on inside of us, in our lives, and often, not always, sometimes it's through talking, but often it's through prayer. The third point that I would like to make, and this is really, when I put this thing together, it was kind of hard for me to know where this next point should go, and you might want to argue with me about this, but in psychotherapy, you have to have awareness, you have to have something wrong, you have to have a plan, or you have to have a mechanism by which you're going to deal with that problem or that situation, and you have to have something that's extremely important. It's called motivation. You have to want to do something about that. You have to want to apply yourself in some way to deal with this. Now, some would say, well, right out of here, right out of an awareness that something's wrong, we should have the motivation change. Not necessarily so. It's often the motivation to get going, to get to treatment. It's often the motivation to get help. But motivation comes in at a later point too. I want to talk about that in a minute. I believe the same kind of process is operating in sacred change, in spiritual change, and that is that we have to do two things, I think, here. One, there has to be a kind of experience of repentance, which implies a motivation to be different. And in addition to that, that we also have to make a new commitment. A new commitment to a different way, to a different life, to God. To seeing ourselves and seeing our situation in a new way. This, in fact, is the point at which I believe things break down for people who want to change. I believe that because in psychotherapy, this is the point where people leave. Many people come to psychotherapy. Many people come looking for assistance with a problem in their life. But after a period of time, usually after, well, you can't put a number of sessions on it, but sometimes after 5, 10, maybe 15 sessions, it begins to be clear that what has to happen is some things have to change. That you have to be different. in some ways, that you have to work at being different. Not only do you have to find out what's going on here, but when you, and this is the easy part, but when you get past that, then you got to begin to say what it is that I'm going to do with that, how it is that I'm going to put that into use in my life. And it's at that point where we come to see that we have to take responsibility for ourselves, where we come to see that we have to take responsibility for our behavior, that we can't hide behind the symptom anymore. Well, I drink because I'm just depressed all the time, or I drink because I've had a difficult life, or whatever it is. We have to come to see that, yeah, maybe that is the reason why you drink. But what are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do about changing a pattern that is destructive in your life? That becomes the real challenge of this section. I believe the same thing is true in spiritual change. That what happens in this situation is that we are confronted with the fact that we are in fact unrighteous, that we are wrong. We can confess that fact, and that helps. But the next step is, what are you going to do with your life then? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to do something in your life to come to terms with what God now expects out of you? We are aware that we're unrighteous. We confess and repent, and we're forgiven. But what are we to do? To go and sin no more. Basically the same problem, I believe, is confronted here with people. And that is, how is it that I can now change my life, that I can begin to take responsibility for doing something in my life? Well, as we know, we don't do that alone. You don't do it alone in psychotherapy, and you don't do it alone in spiritual change. In psychotherapy, it's with the help, motivation with the help of what we call a change agent. That's a nice term for the guy who you're working with in therapy, a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a pastoral counselor, whoever. Although I want to leave pastoral counselors out for a minute, because it doesn't quite fit what I want to get to here. But over here, of course, we're talking about with the help of God. But I guess from my frame of reference, and I don't know how you folks feel about this, but I don't think it's all God. I think there is grace in what happens to us here. But I think we are still in that process. And what seems to me breaks down for us, not only for people who start psychotherapy because they want to change their lives and because they and cannot stay with it because it means taking responsibility and doing something different rather than destructive in one's life. I believe it happens here also, that we want God to come into our lives, that we want help with our unrighteousness. We confess that, and we commit to a new way, but living that is very difficult. Living it under the perception that, or with the perception that, the way of the cross is in front of us makes it very difficult for us to proceed along that path, for us to continue along that path, sometimes even with the help of God. How many people talk about being saved 3 or 4 or 5 times? Maybe 10 times, being saved and falling from grace, being saved and having to be rescued again. Not that that isn't a part of all of our experience, but I'd like you to see in that how difficult it is and how unautomatic this is in terms of our beginning to move in a new spiritual direction in our life. Not a question of whether we're saved or not or whether God has forgiven us or not, but a question of what have we done with it, you see, and how much that involves our responsibility and our obligation. Okay, the fifth point here, for those of us who stick around, or those who do stick around and stay through this change process, is in psychotherapy, the alleviation of the symptom. It can also mean better functioning in general. We learn how to live our lives without alcohol. We learn how to live our lives without crippling depression. Might be changed attitude down here. Might be better functioning, as I've already indicated. Improved behavior. But out of it basically comes a kind of symptom removal or an alleviation of the problem that brought us. Likewise, out of spiritual change comes new life. But not just the alleviation of the symptom, but a radical kind of new life. And an awareness of what it is that we need to do with our life. The last point that I want to make in this outline is kind of what comes out of that. From a secular point of view, we can talk about self-improvement. We can talk about self-actualization, which Maslow talks about. We can talk about an improvement in ourself, really these two together. And out of spiritual change, we have to talk about something much broader than ourselves. But I believe that what comes out of this kind of change, the spiritual change, is a mission. Not necessarily one mission in particular, but a mission that takes us outside of ourselves. That, for me, encompasses one of the significant differences here between change in psychotherapy and change through spiritual conversion. That this becomes a life organizing or reorganizing kind of change, the end result which is a movement outside of ourselves, a movement away from ourselves, ultimately into caring for and relating to and working with and giving to other people. And that psychotherapy, and I don't mean to put psychotherapy down, this is what I do for a living and I believe it's extremely valuable, but in a sense it is limiting in that often in psychotherapy the change is much more circumspect. The change is much more specific. Now, that doesn't mean that what happens in psychotherapy many times is a very real change in a person's life attitudes that can then move them into many other directions, maybe even into this area. There's a book in the library, and I believe it's in the bookstore, that called The Road Less Traveled by M. Scott Peck, a psychiatrist who believes basically that spiritual change actually takes place through this process. That the process of psychotherapy is one step in spiritual growth. And I can in some ways buy that, because I believe, if you can see the comparison here, that we're talking about a very similar kind of experience. Now the difference, of course, is that in psychotherapy, again, ruling out pastoral counselors, we're not dealing with God here. The therapeutic alliance is between two people. And in spiritual conversion, we're talking about the help of God. On the other hand, then, let's come to the problem of what about the pastoral counselor? What about the Christian psychologist? How does that work? What happens in that situation? Does God work through us in changing the lives of other people? I think He does. Does God use us to be of assistance to other people? I think He does. And I think really that's what Peck is talking about. He's talking about a framework in which people change through the process of psychotherapy. Not necessarily, these are not his comparisons, these are mine, but he's talking about the fact that it can happen, in fact, in both. Or happen all here. My own feeling is that it really doesn't have to be an either-or process. It's a both-and process. In a sense, I believe the similarities are there, and I believe the similarities are real, with some differences that we pointed out. And yet, at the same time, I believe that spiritual change and development and growth can take place through the psychotherapy process. I think it's more likely to take place here, and I think, it's, especially from a straight secular point of view, it's more likely to be more specific in this situation. But I believe that we're talking about some of the same dynamics in terms of what we have to do and what we have to bring and the help we can get through that kind of process. So, as I said, I believe it's an either or a both-and situation rather than an either-or kind of situation. I just add one more thing here. that I think is important. Not all people see psychotherapy in such a positive way. Thomas Size has written a book called The Myth of Psychotherapy. He also wrote a book about 8 or 9 or 10 years ago called The Myth of Mental Illness. And in the book, what Size points out, or what Size tries to say in his The Myth of Psychotherapy, is that psychiatry and psychology and psychotherapy, really, has kind of tried to become a religion in and of itself. And that not only is it a religion, but it's a fake religion. And that it's a way of misleading people, in a sense, about what it is. He says, for example, psychotherapy says it's scientific. And that the process of psychotherapy and the process of psychiatry and psychology advertise themselves as scientific, when in fact they're either religious or rhetoric. He talks about rhetoric in the tradition, or the classic sense of the Greeks, the rhetoricians. But he talks about the he talks about psychotherapy being essentially a religion, or a religious approach in the broad sense, not necessarily in the Christian sense, of course. And that yet we, or they, whoever, don't really acknowledge that. Saz, however, is almost bitter about that kind of situation, and is apparently grinding an axe that that has to do with what he feels are the inroads that psychotherapy is making in this process, or in this area, and the way in which it has, in a sense, seduced people into believing that somehow this can be meaningful, when in fact probably we have to deal with much broader issues. Well, I'm going to stop there, and I've kept pretty close to time. I have a number of other things I'd like to say, but I want to stop there and just let you react to that comparison, those similarities and differences, and see what you have to say about it. What do you think?
Change, this struck me as you were going through it, is the doctrine of the cross, how something has to die before it can be resurrected, changing an attitude or changing position in life, and how applicable that is.
Yes, I believe that's exactly what I was trying to say here. You said it very, very, very succinctly, that I believe in both of these situations, before we can come to any healing, we have to be aware of our brokenness. And we have to experience the brokenness, I think. We have to experience it in a way that that makes us see that something has to be done. That we can no longer fool ourselves. We can no longer go along in our lives living as if we were okay. And that when we can acknowledge that, speaking spiritually, when we can acknowledge our brokenness, when we can acknowledge what has to change, then we have the beginning steps to change. But I see it, too, as a kind of twofold process. I see God's grace here for us. But I see also a kind of commitment that we have to make, and a kind of working on, and working toward, and working with God, so that those changes mean something in our life, and so that so the saving grace that we experience is also the basis for our spiritual growth, which moves us to a different perspective other than just how can I feel better. But also, what can I do now? How can I take that to other people? Where is my mission? How do I follow Christ at that point? Same is true here. We have to be hurting, I think, before we really know that we need change. And it's out of that hurt. And I've seen this in my work over and over again. I've seen it in my own life. That out of the hurt in our life is the hope for something different, if we're willing to struggle with it. We're willing to work with it. So many times, we're what Peck calls again in his book, The Road Less Traveled, we're lazy. And by lazy, he means a particular kind of behavior that that there's a part of us that he equates, in a sense, with the entropy of the universe, the breaking down of the universe, too detailed to go into it, but that he says is a part of our laziness, our unwillingness to build ourselves up, to move ahead in our spiritual growth or in our change, so that it's too hard. It becomes too easy to stay where we're at. And many times you see this when people drop out of therapy. I've gone as far as I want to go. I can see that, or I don't want to you know, you're telling me that I have to do something in my life. You know, the expectation was if I understood this, that it would all be better. This is the most misleading thing that I think that people think about psychotherapy, that somehow if you understand your problem, it's going to go away. See, that's only the basis, it's only the beginning, because out of the understanding comes, what are you going to have to do about that now? How can you begin to change? How can you begin to relate to your world in a different way?
You mentioned early on about people who speak of having been saved several times, of having been saved, fallen away from grace. I think that was the language that you used. The model that strikes me and the experience of my own life is not necessarily that I fall from grace, but there are times in my life when I do have conversion experiences, as it were, where there is, through a particular experience, a sudden deepening of my experience of my own sinfulness, my experience of God's grace, you know, and that whole process. So that it's something that's ongoing in the life of the Christian, ongoing in the life of someone who's in psychotherapy, I think.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess I'm thinking a little bit about something a little bit different than that. When I think about the people, and maybe I used a poor example here, but I think about this process. There are a number of people I've worked with, for example, who when I'm working with them in psychotherapy and talk with them about their lives and about their faith, they say to me, well, I tried religion and it didn't work. Okay, that's really what I was kind of getting at here, that religion doesn't work and psychotherapy isn't going to work either, in a sense, because both imply a kind of commitment to change. And when people tell me, many people who have had certain of those kinds of conversion experiences where they felt very, very much saved, a mountaintop kind of experience, and then a year later, it has no meaning to them.
Well, it's like dropping out of therapy in the third session, right? Or the third stage there.
Yes, right, exactly. That the commitment is too great. I often see this with adolescents. Sometimes seems very troubled adolescents have an extremely strong, quote, saved experience, often in a Pentecostal kind of situation. And then, and I don't mean to decry that, but they seem to be attracted many times to that kind of experience because it to them it represents a way of putting everything together, solving everything. And they come away from that feeling very good, and they come in sometimes symptom-free for a short period of time. But when I stay with them over a period of time, when they stay with it, that drops away, and they go back to, when that doesn't prove to be the magic, when that doesn't prove to be the trick that's going to kind of take care of everything, and when again we're faced with the reality of what do I have to do in my life to help that along, or to what kind of responsibility now do I have to take for that?
We're all looking for a shortcut.
Yeah, we're lazy.
Underlying the capital on the S, too, for capital S, the separation from God and sin rather than an individual. You know, the conversion that you're talking about is to Christianity, I assume.
Yes. Yes, I'm talking about Christian experience here. Let me...
Okay.
You want to just pick it back up for a minute?
I wanted to take that further of what you were saying in terms of talking about getting to that point of commitment and how it falls away at that point. That it seems to me that there's something there about the experience of God, the experience of grace in that conversion experience that somehow never quite gets incarnated. It never becomes an experience of being human, an experience of God as being human, and that's where it falls apart, and that's where the commitment can no longer happen because then you get to a point where you realize that even this conversion and this experience of God has to do with being a broken human being.
It's like our perception of grace, that if we're not looking for it, we don't find it, in a way. That if we don't look for God's efforts and God's contact with us in our lives, we don't see it. Same kind of thing, I think. Yeah.
Are you saying that if a person... Now, what vocabulary to use, but be a Christian with a sense of mission and yet not need psychotherapy help? I mean, are these supposed to be lined up? So
are they mutually exclusive?
Right.
Is that what you're saying? No, I don't think so. Because I don't think that again, I don't think it's an either or situation. I think Christians break down. I think Christians need help in their lives. I think God works in many ways to heal us. And I don't think because we've been through this process that suddenly we are immune to other kinds of things that happen to us. I know that's not the case for me. I feel like my life has been turned around through this experience. But I carry Joe Vaughn around with me every day, too. And there are some parts of him that I wish I didn't have to bring with me. And there are some parts of him that probably, in fact, do benefit from and get assistance from that kind of process. And I guess that's what I mean by this isn't an automatic ticket to no problems or to a life of a peace and serenity from there on in.
Well, anyhow, you're talking in a sense about the problem model, but our models of development and growth on both sides are on problem models. People can have a lifelong spiritual experience by which they simply grow through progress. And similarly, on this side, Eric Erickson describes growth in which we, in fact, arrive at a sense of the task that he calls integrity, which is a sense fulfilling a mission like a Christian.
Yes, this is one model. You're absolutely correct. And this is, in a sense, my model, and not just mine, but probably many others, but may not be the only model. I acknowledge that. However, just taking Erickson's framework for a moment and applying it maybe to both of these, Erickson does talk about stages that we move through in our lives. And we could apply that to both sections. The problem is that the stages that we move through, we don't move through very smoothly all the time. Okay, we experience difficulties. So this would fit quite well into that. I believe the same thing in a sense happens here. That, for example, in our faith walk, many of us were born into families that had a very strong faith and kind of took that over, or were given that, or were just so much a part of that just by osmosis we kind of came to this point. There is something to be said about the possibility, however, that all of us at some point have to take that general faith and make it personal in our own lives. And that we have to, and that in doing that, this process again might come into play. Not so much that there'd be some terrible problem here, but that the awareness has to be on a personal level. The awareness of what we need and the spiritual kind of change that we need in our life has to be on not just a family level, but on a personal level. Again, I'm quoting Peck mostly because he's in my mind. I've just been reading this book, and there's many insights from my point of view, and I guess partially because he's a psychiatrist and writes about psychotherapy and spirituality. But he talks about the notion that I find fascinating, and maybe all of you already know about, that maybe there's a process of development in our spiritual faith that goes from, what is his word, a kind of, for want of a better word, and it's not his word, what I want to say is a kind of naive religion, that is the religion of our parents, or the spirituality of our parents. And it is all tied up with what they expected of us, and what we see as their wish for us, and what we see as their problems within that. And that what we have to come to, maybe, out of that is a kind of, I think he does call it an agnosticism. And out of that, right into my other things here, out of that, and it shouldn't be going down, it should be going up, it becomes a personal kind of religion, or our own encounter and a more, a fuller kind of sense of our personal relationship, our personal spiritual growth. Here again, that's one model. It may not be the model for everybody. Partly it appeals to me because that's what happened to me again. That, you know, out of my own experience, what I received was a Sunday school education by a mother who was a Lutheran and by a father who never went to church and said, I don't care whether I go or not, you go to Sunday school. And I went to Sunday school and I went to confirmation, and then I stopped. When I was old enough to stop, then I quit. And I questioned this, for 15 or 20 years. until I could come to grips with, until I had to come to grips with it, not from the point of view of what I was given, out of my baptism or out of my confirmation or out of my Sunday school education, but from what I had to come to in terms of my own life and my own personal spiritual work. So, but that's a long answer or a long response to you.
I'd be concerned about the people who say, well, I must have a problem because I don't feel like I have a problem.
Somebody thinks that's a problem. So, yeah. I don't know how I feel about that because, as I said, people have asked me that before. Why does everybody have to? Why does everybody talk about their death experiences to talk about this? I don't know. Let me just. Or you want to respond to that, and then I'll go up to.
I guess I would just say that I think that's basic to our theology and what we even through Sunday school and the outline of the catechism. I was just thinking as I looked at that, you can make just a whole series of very interesting footnotes from the very good catechism and the experiential approach. And I think that's really what we hope to do as we spend time with young people in the catechism. It doesn't mean that it's going to grab them then, but it's going to give them that material so that they can relate to their experience of God in terms of good theology and the way the grace of God works. I think it'd be fun to take your outline and just do a bunch of catechism footnotes.
Mm. Let me just go back to that question, the business of what if I don't have a problem, if my problem is I don't have a problem. I think that could be a problem or couldn't be a problem. How's that for a good psychotherapeutic response? I think it could be a problem in the sense that if there are many people in therapy, for example, there are many people walking around who don't believe they have any problems. When you and I look at them, we say, now that person has a problem. Or when their spouse comes in to talk about them, or when their son or daughter grows up and says, this is what happened to me in my life. This is what my father did to me, this is what my mother did to me, or this is what I experienced. We know that those people had a problem. But they didn't know it. So I think it could be a problem if one didn't know that one had a problem. At the same time, I think, I'm sure there must be people who probably kind of have this together over their lifetime. I don't know. My experiences are not broad enough to really say that. Yeah, I'll give
a chance. Oh, on your outline, which I think is very creative. If you think at all from points 4, 5, and 6 on the right side, we've got 4.
Oh, 4, 6. I hope I didn't leave one out here. Let me see. No, I didn't.
About the role of the church. Because it seems number 4, it's not, perhaps it's not just with the help of God, but in fact, with the help of those into whom you come into fellowship. And that new life, part of its radical newness is that new experience, which differentiates itself from number 5 on the left, because it's not adjustment in the typical sense. It may be maladjustment in terms of how society
is. Good point. Right.
And likewise, in terms of mission, it's a mission with. In other words, that's part of the progression, part of the dimension that perhaps, might be contrasted and added. I'm just a thought.
Yeah, good point, Wes. And I did have here in one of my earlier outlines, I got about 4 here, but I did talk about this from the point of view of pastor, God through pastor, God through pastoral counselor, and you're really saying, God through church, God through fellowship, God through believers, others who support us. Good. I just left the point off here too, in just further enhancing that the change agents sometimes in psychotherapy have been a variety of different kinds of people too, and we sometimes see this through the friendship process. That's why some people have at times said, "Well, psychotherapy is any more than purchased friendship," because we had a good friend that could do this. And, I suppose if you really wanted to take that argument to the extreme, that's possible. I don't know many friends who want to sit with that as long and as often and as hard as it takes, but I guess there.
You made a few comments about the possibility of the pastoral counselor or Christian counselor type integrating and being able to do the psychotherapeutic process with the person, but then lead the person to God This is a very difficult thing, which I haven't resolved, because the criticism often leveled at pastoral counselors is that they are neither good pastors nor good counselors. Mm-hmm. And that is why often people like you get the PhD in clinical psych rather than a master's in seminary, because...
That wasn't even a choice for me back then,
okay.
But I know your point.
But, you know, you want to be good, at least, at psychotherapy. And the thing that I see, the abuse or the excess of a lot of Christian counselors, I think they get very confused, and when they're trying to help a person facilitate change, they instead end up pumping their own brand of Christian thinking.
Yes.
And so you get your, well, Jay Adams or whoever, you get your books and a lot of biblical literalism. And I think something that I would like to think more about is how can a counselor, whether they are, how can a Christian who is in the counseling profession, whether PhD in clinical psych, psychiatrist, master's level counselor, how can we integrate the Christian faith in such a way that we use the tools we've learned in studying psychotherapy, but we use them hoping to facilitate true spiritual conversion? I mean, it's a kind of unanswerable.
Yeah.
But
that's part of why, Karen, that's exactly why I wanted to, why that didn't fit with this kind of pattern, because I was hard pressed to see how that would work too. I do think, however, there is a parallel again in psychotherapy, and that is the therapist who decides that he is going to save his client, just as the pastoral counselor who decides that he is going to save his parishioner through this kind of personal experience, if he believes he can, in a sense, make it happen. I don't think it happens. I think in both of these, I see a tremendous amount of our wanting to come both to a new way here and to a solution of the problem here. It doesn't make any difference who you're working with, that unless you can do this and stay with this, I don't know that it happens, although that conflicts for me, and I'm a bad theologian. I'm not a theologian at all, and that's part of my problem. But that conflicts with me in some ways, too, though, with the grace of God and how that balance between what is it that God gives to us and what is it that we have to take for ourselves and what is it we have to do for ourselves. Some of you can probably answer that better than I and probably argue the theoretical.
Well, the person has to help himself. The counselor or the psychiatrist or whoever can't do it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he is unwilling to help himself, then where to turn? You can't just say to a person, pray, because that person isn't at that point. He has to have his own willingness. He has to have his own desire to get beyond this point. And if he hasn't,
see, I think the problem becomes, though, that if you say to somebody, if a pastoral counselor or a pastor says to somebody, pray, they will pray. I think how they pray and
yes,
what's really inside in terms of that prayer.
But do
has
they
a
know
to
how
do
to pray?
Or do they want to at some well, level, too? Or do they want to totally give up this kind of situation and do this? Just as in therapy, if you know, we have people, I see people in psychotherapy for long periods of time, some of whom are successful, many of whom are not. You have to ask yourself then, of course, is a therapist doing what he's supposed to do? I mean, that's the part that I have to own. But I always have to ask this question. And I always ask another question, that is, when things are going wrong in psychotherapy, I always ask the question, am I working harder at this than that person is? And when the answer to that question is yes, then I'm not going to be successful. Or that person is not going to be successful. That's an interesting comment. I'm not going to be successful. That person is not going to be successful in psychotherapy. Because if I'm working harder at it than he or she is, it's not going to go.
There are some of us, as we are looking ahead, feel that we need to reestablish what classically has been called the role of the spiritual director. And get the priest and the minister out of the role of counselor into spiritual director, friend, and the Christian counselor into a sensitivity of when that person should also, the right time find a spiritual director that will help them just in those particular areas, not in these other areas that you're trained for. I'm a terrible, you know, psychologist or anything like that, and I want to remain that because I refer right away. Mm-hmm. But I think I have some expertise in terms of spiritual direction, of hearing confessions, of that kind of sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And
the point is well made. The problem in practice is how to combine these two and how to get two people working with the person in that way. I have a very good relationship with one of our pastors, with both of them really, but with one of them from the point of view of our talking about and working with people who he refers to me. But when to do it, when he needs to be there, when I need to be there, when we ought to be there together, how to do that becomes really complicated. On the other hand, it's also very difficult when you try to put a psychologist in that position, I suppose, or when you put a pastor in the position of being a psychologist. That's why in some ways, although given your comment that maybe they're not good at either one, somehow maybe if you combine the two, maybe you'd have the best of both worlds. Maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you don't have to combine the two. I don't know. Yeah.
That's what the Gospels, the Gospels talk about healing, about forgiveness, about new life. To me, we've learned a lot in the secular world, if you want to call it that, and we've learned a lot about how to help people see their problems, alcoholism or other kinds of things. But I think that the Gospels has something to say about what your right side has to say about healing a new life for us. And so I'm really interested in how one can use prayer or confession or repentance to supplement psychotherapy or what the relationship with that is. I mean, Jesus says you got to give up your life. He says a lot of other things too. And, you know, giving over to God, how does that relate to psychotherapy and helping people deal with inability to communicate with their spouse or problems they've had, you know, other kinds of things. That's what I thought this talk was about, and it's been very interesting, but that's still...
We didn't answer those questions.
We didn't answer those questions,
okay.
No.
Carl Jung had inscribed over his door, invited or uninvited, God is present here. I think that that is very useful to me as a pastoral counselor. I don't have it inscribed over my door, my office, but I often tell clients, my opinion is that invited or uninvited, God is present here. What that means to me is the grace element that you were bringing up. I can't manufacture grace, and neither can the client, but I can say that the principles of psychotherapy are not enough, and that motivation often comes more from grace than anything else. And like Tournier, I guess I feel that almost everybody I see wants to talk about where it's really at for them spiritually, that it's you just start scratching the surface a tad, and people are unloading about faith stuff, you know, where they lost it, or where it hurts, or what they wish they had, and so I don't know, that's just a...
Well, I would just respond to the one part, and that is that I think we don't have to pray with somebody, we don't have to say we're... identifies ourselves as a Christian psychologist or a Christian counselor for God to be there, and I think that's the point that you're making. I saw a man in my practice, and he came in, and the first thing he said was, "Let's begin with a word of prayer." And I said to him, "That's not the way I work. I'd be happy to wait for a moment if you would like to say a prayer, but." That is not the way that I think I can be of help to you. Not that prayer isn't important, but that's not what we're going to be doing here. I don't think that that's a particular. I don't think that's a problem. You know, I don't think that that's wrong. I think that that God is not going to necessarily work through me if He's working through me through my praying with somebody. Although He might work in that way too, but I would hope that He would be working through me in who I am in relation to my faith and my trying to heal with. And work with another person. But, yeah, Larry.
This is a comment of a different sort. It relates to one that Wes mentioned about the place of the church. There's an interesting book by Don Browning called The Moral Context of Pastoral Care. And Don Browning has been one of the people that has developed some models of pastoral care and is now himself reacting against the professionalization of that. He gives has great gratitude for the development of skills by different schools of secular psychotherapy and their appropriation of them for pastoral counseling, etc. But the book, The Moral Context of Pastoral Care, points to the fact that congregations have lost the ability to be the context for healing, and that it's become the task of certain appointed and trained individuals, and that really can't handle the day-to-day problems. It has to reach a crisis situation, and then those folks may or may not get help by the professionally trained. And I just think there's so much for us to do as communities, as congregations. And so one task is for people like you and pastoral counselors to really to equip the saints, so to speak, to equip the congregation to be that healing community.
Thank you all.